Now, the voices of Bronco Athletics, Bob Beeler and Chris Lewis on Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, The Ticket.
This weekend seems to me to sum up the NFL season. Story leading into the wild card games takes away the focus from the games on the field, and it seems like that's where it's been all season. Talk about who's standing and who's not for the national anthem, and is Ezekiel Elliott in or out for the Dallas Cowboys, dominated the NFL season. Today it's coaches from teams who aren't even going to play this weekend. One has been eliminated, the other gets the bye. Bill Belichick and John Gruden off the field are making more news than any of the coaches that will be playing in the four games this weekend. Chris, it's just another weekend in the NFL, and the NFL has done a bad job of letting you focus on the games, but sometimes the stories away from the field are more fascinating, with Belichick, Kraft, and Brady and their little triumvirate as far as who should do what to whom, and then John Gruden getting the multi-million dollar deal, it appears, with the Raiders.
Yeah, this stuff is fun. Like, you mentioned all the other negative stuff, like the Ezekiel Elliott suspension, Willie Aroney, the national anthem, will they stand, won't they stand? Like, those are stories that aren't really fun and that we're taking away from the NFL product. This, I don't really even group into that category. This is fun stuff. This is like Game of Thrones type, who has control, who's the real king of the New England Patriots, who's really running the show. No, this is fun stuff. I don't really, this is at least football related. Mm-hmm. This doesn't like tie in issues in society and throwing them in front of you when you're trying to consume your NFL product. No, this is fun. Like, you say this takes away from the enjoyment of Wild Card Weekend. I don't think it does that. It kind of highlights it. It kind of enhances it. This is a fun story.
It takes away from the four games that are being played because it doesn't cause any interest in any of the four games that are being played.
Yeah, I mean, the New England Patriots are always a specter over what's going on because, especially in the AFC, any team that looks good, they're going to be measured, well, how will they do against the New England Patriots? And again, it's at least on field. Most of this is on-field drama, or, you know, things that involve on the field turning into off-field drama between three pretty important figures within the dynasty of the NFL over the last 15 years. Yeah, sign me up for stories like this.
When you look at what the Patriots did in the middle of the season, I scratched my head when they gave up Jimmy Garoppolo in the middle of the year. I understand maybe you walk with nothing if he leaves at the end of the year, which he probably would if Brady was going to remain with the Patriots and not retire. And I've never heard the word retire come out of anybody's mouth about Tom Brady yet. But to me, you traded your biggest insurance policy. Look at the Eagles. The Eagles have the best position in the NFC, supposedly. But with Foles as the quarterback, no one thinks that they're in the best position in the NFC. Mm-mm. I don't think losing the insurance policy was worth the second round pick.
Yeah, that hurts. And forget the insurance policy for this year, too. I mean, that's certainly a huge thing. Tom Brady's one bad hit away from missing a key drive in a game in which then, who's it, Brian Hoyer has to come in instead of Jimmy Garoppolo, where every game he started, the team has won, whether it's with the 49ers or with the Patriots when Brady was suspended last year. But even on top of, the second round pick, which will be almost the equivalent of a first-round pick, although significantly worse because the 49ers just had a winning streak towards the end of the year, which almost, you know, hurt the value of that pick. It could have been basically the first or second pick of the second round. But the Patriots like picking in that area anyway. They don't like investing the money in early first-round picks. They love the back end of the first round, early second round. If you follow what they've done throughout the years, they've targeted those picks and accumulated as many of those as possible. But I think the more fascinating thing with this is, why did this come out now? Why did this story get dropped right now by, you know, Seth Wickersham is the one who authored it over at ESPN.com. And on that note, who's gaining anything from this story getting out? Who's gaining anything from the leak? Because anytime there's a story that comes out that's similar to this, I always think, okay, who's the sources? Who's being made to look better from this story? Who's being made to look worse from this story getting out? And what does that mean going forward for the characters that are involved in the story? And I'll give my opinion on it. I wonder if you guys agree or disagree with your interpretation of the story. But I think the long feature makes Brady look more like the unreasonable character in this. And I think it makes Belichick look more forward-thinking. And that makes it me think that this is largely Belichick's team trying to control the narrative after Jimmy Garoppolo had all this success with San Francisco and as you mentioned, only getting a second round pick in return. It's almost like Bill Belichick is getting his explanation out there on why that went down, and also bracing himself for what might come between a showdown between Belichick and Tom Brady. And this is largely Bill Belichick's version of the events. At least that's what I gathered from this story.
I agree that it looks like it's coming from the Belichick camp, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Another reason I think it's coming from the Belichick camp is in this triumvirate, it appears that Kraft is siding with Brady.
Mm-hmm.
So that leaves Belichick on his own. So I think there's more for him to gain. I also, if it's not priming Belichick, and I don't know what his contract status is, of whether he could be a free agent at the end of the year or in another year, but I think it's priming Belichick to exit the Patriots.
Yeah, that's also the other takeaway that I got from it is, before this, I always thought Brady would finish his career with another team. Just the way the Patriots operated was veterans, as soon as you show the little blip that you're about to drop off, they'll move on from you with the drop of a hat. Every position, linebacker to defensive line to running back to receiver.
But not to quarterback.
But not to Tom Brady yet. It hadn't happened yet, but to be fair, he really had it dropped off, and he still has it.
No.
Even though the article does say that in a couple of examples this year, you know, Belichick's really lit into Tom Brady because there is at least a hint that he's not seeing the same things or hitting the same throws with the accuracy that he used to. But, yeah, before this, I always thought it'd be, all right, there'd come a point where Tom Brady still wants to play, the New England Patriots want to move on, and he'd be released. It'd be probably, you know, publicly handled better than what the, you know, the Packers did with the Brett Favre saga. But they'd eventually go their separate ways, and the Patriots would use their succession plan with Jimmy Garoppolo or the next guy, and Belichick would remain in business as usual. What this story did do is change my thoughts on what I think is going to happen with the Patriots moving forward. I think there will be a point where Belichick and Brady retire together. I'm not going to take it a step as far as a lot of people are in saying, oh, this is the last year for Bill Belichick. After this season, he's going to leave. He's going to find a different situation. It'll be Brady and Robert Kraft playing out the string over there in New England. I don't think that's going to be the case. But I do think Brady and Belichick will step away together, with Belichick saying there's really no future plan with the Patriots at quarterback, and when Brady's 45 or however old he is and he's no longer has it anymore and he decides to step away, I think that'll be it for Belichick as well. However, I do think Belichick will eventually come back. I don't think his last stop is with New England, but I do think there's some value in him and Brady retiring together, and then it'll be like a year or two and Belichick will come back.
And I agree with you. I think Kraft wants Brady to retire as a Patriot. Mm-hmm. I think he's won enough Super Bowls. I think he's more interested in the legacy of Tom Brady than he is in winning another Super Bowl.
Which, as a fan, if you are a fan of the Patriots, is that exactly what you would want? Because in a way, didn't those decisions be made for the long-term success of the Patriots franchise? Although, while the Patriots are worse off long-term without Jimmy G, I don't think anybody can disagree with that, especially with the success that he's had so far with the 49ers. Like, on that note, I don't think he really had another choice, because Kraft himself cannot be viewed as the guy who pushed Tom Brady out the door. Like, as much as, remember the Green Bay thing, where Favre and the Packers, really as an organization, for a couple of years, they didn't speak to each other. I don't think Robert Kraft wants to have that on his resume at all. But it does set them up worse long-term. So it is not a clear answer of what is better for the New England Patriots. Do you want to be known as the franchise that catered to Tom Brady and treated him like the king that maybe he deserves to be? Or are you better off long-term moving on from him when it is time to move on from him and having a long-term backup plan?
Of course, the 49ers moved on from Joe Montana. Now, Walsh was gone by the time. Seifert was the coach. But they sent him to Kansas City because they thought Steve Young was the heir apparent. And it probably ended getting them another couple of Super Bowls because Young had gone by, or maybe Montana had regressed, or both, that allowed the 49ers to kind of keep their dynasty spinning a few more years off of that than I think if they had decided to get rid of Steve Young and keep Joe Montana.
On the other side of it, I know it's a cross-sport example, but the Lakers and what they did with Kobe, how the Lakers gave Kobe that extension near the end of his career when he was no longer an efficient top five player in basketball, or even really top 10, but they paid him like it, which hamstrung their salary cap situation, which they're still trying to recover from. They're on an organizational long four straight seasons without being in the playoffs. And you can trace that back to them giving Kobe the extension. Now, the whole question is it worth it from the organization to have Kobe treated like the king that he was? Remember the season a couple of years ago, the farewell tour, and being able to raise the two jerseys into the rafters like they just did? Was that worth not having a long-term plan and hurting the organization in the short term and perhaps a long term too? I don't really know the answer to that.
I mean, we've seen teams over the years keep people around, pay too much money, and the team gets old, and then they don't. They have to take a step back or two before they come back. I think that's one of the toughest things. You want to reward loyalty. You want to reward past success. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's hard to do that in the short term if you want to keep winning.
So I think the lesson here is probably you shouldn't. And that's what Bill Belichick's like. We don't. That's the fundamental disagreement between, I think, Belichick and Kraft. Belichick has always been, we don't pay for past performance. Mm-hmm. And they have reached the ultimate decision of, well, they probably are going to have to pay for past performance when it comes to Tom Brady.
But Belichick sees his career as longer than Brady sees his. Mm-hmm. Brady, even though he hasn't talked about it, knows the end is closer. Belichick, as an older guy, as a coach, could go on longer than Brady. And I think Brady is more interested in how he's going to finish, where Belichick is more interested in how he's going to finish. And how he's going to finish would probably be without Tom Brady. I agree with you, Chris. I think that Belichick's last coaching job will not be with the Patriots. Hit Dave and Buster's for the football playoffs and register to win a three-day, two-night staycation at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas. Watch every game you can at Dave and Buster's this season. Register your name to win. You must be present on Sunday, February 4th for the big game to win. You will enjoy a three-day, two-night stay at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino, plus a $300 credit at the exclusive MB Steakhouse and a pair of VIP concert passes at the Joint at the Hard Rock. See JP on Saturday at 2:30. For Tennessee and Kansas City. Up next, Georgia, Alabama. Alabama is favored, but should they be? Chip Towers of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution joins us next on Sports Radio The Ticket. Georgia and Alabama for the College Football National Championship. Bob and Chris here on Idaho Sports Talk. We'll be here until 3. Caves and Prater will take over from 3 until 6. It'll be Mike Prater today, joined by Rick Worthington. Georgia and Alabama. Chip Towers has covered the Georgia Bulldogs for a long time. You can catch him at Dog. That's DAWGNation.com. Also in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Chip, pleased to welcome you to our show in Idaho. You've got one more game to cover coming up Monday night. And how many storylines are coming out new that maybe people in Idaho would not know about the Georgia-Alabama game Monday night?
Well, you know, I think a lot of the storylines, a lot of the nation is aware of just because of, you know, what all Nick Saban has done and Kirby Smart being his right-hand man for all those years. That'll be the biggest, you know, storyline that you hear talked about this week. Mentor and protege, teacher and student, all that kind of stuff. And that'll be a big part of it. The other one is the Jake Fromm story, which I just think is fantastic. I don't know how much you guys know about it in that part of the country, but, you know, Jacob Eason, a five-star prospect, returning starter at quarterback, goes out in the first quarter of the first game with a knee injury, not terribly serious, but enough to knock him out for several games. And Jake Fromm, somewhat expected maybe to redshirt or at least be a backup this year. Has to grab his helmet and hurry into the game. And they just about haven't lost since then. And he's a big reason why. He's an unbelievable player. It's what they said about him when he was coming out of Houston County. It's spelled like Houston County, but they pronounce it Houston around here in Warner Robins. And, you know, what his coach, I give him a lot of credit for saying from the beginning, he says he didn't know what's going to happen when Jake Fromm came to Georgia with Jacob Eason and all that, but he said if he ever gets a chance, he's not coming out of the game. There's no moment that's too big for that kid, and we haven't found it yet. Maybe this will be it in Mercedes-Benz Stadium, you know, against the preeminent power in college football in the national championship game, but so far, you know, if Georgia loses, it hasn't been because of quarterback play. In fact, they've won because of quarterback play.
In the last 15 to 20 years, you know, Mark Richt was there for such a long time as Georgia coach. Why is this team for Georgia? They've had a lot of talent over the years, a lot of names that people will know in the NFL. Why is this team where it is?
Well, you know, Bob, I haven't earned any fans around here when I say this, but I've said it a couple of times. Now, so far, Kirby Smart hasn't done anything that Mark Richt didn't do. And, you know, I mean, in fact, they've exactly paralleled each other almost to the letter. Mark Richt went 8-4 in his first season. Kirby Smart went 8-5. Mark Richt went 13-1 in his second season. They had an unexpected, disappointing road loss against Florida in the middle of the season, but otherwise won every game, but they were frozen out. There was no playoff then. So they go and absolutely dominate an FSU team in the Sugar Bowl. A lot of people thought they might have been the best player, but they were frozen out. I can't remember who it was that year. I guess Southern Cal maybe in Ohio State, somebody, one of those. He had two undefeated teams, so they weren't able to get in the championship game. And that began a run, you know, 2002, 2003, 2004, 2005. Georgia was top five team in America. In 2007, they finished second. And again, if there'd have been a playoff, they would have been in it. They were 11-2 and had a couple of disappointing losses early in the year, which is not to degrade anything that Kirby Smart's done. I do think it's special, and I do think in some respects it's better than what Kirby Smart was able to do from the standpoint of, I mean, they're just recruiting like mad. That's the difference. Georgia has the number one class for 2018 at this moment. They were third in 2016, and he managed to cobble together at his 6th, 7th, 8th, whatever it was, coming in December in his first year. And then his experience in games like this is very, very evident when you're getting ready. I mean, just the schedule, the planning, the logistics, very, very Alabama-esque Georgia is right now, and that's going to be interesting when these two teams line up Monday night.
Chip Towers joining us, DogNation.com, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Now, Alabama, right now, from what I'm seeing at Oddshark.com, 5-point favorites over Georgia. Is that line right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm not surprised, but, you know, I mean, you know, that's going to be the narrative again. Alabama's been here so much. You know, why would you pick, you know, especially if you're talking about gambling, why would you pick against Alabama, you know, with what they've done? But listen, guys, that, you know, there's something, this will just infuriate Bama fans, but, you know, what a lot of people aren't talking about is how much of the secret sauce that Nick Saban has had going on at Alabama was Kirby Smart. I mean, he's been with him every step of the way. He's been his right-hand man. He joined him at LSU. He went with him to the Miami Dolphins. He came back to Alabama with him, and he gave him a tremendous amount of responsibility, assistant head coach, defensive coordinator, when he was at Alabama. He is a dynamo, you know, when it comes to recruiting and energy and things like that. So, you know, I think that's a real factor. I mean, you know, Kirby Smart, yeah, Alabama knows Kirby Smart, but Kirby Smart knows Alabama as well as anybody. And if anybody knows where their soft underbellies are, you know, I would think he does. And also, you know, this is not quite – I mean, I think most people would agree with this. You've paid attention to college football this year. This is a good Alabama team. All Alabama teams are good, period, under Nick Saban. But they're not the, you know, quite the juggernaut that you saw – really as recently as 2016, but that won the championship in 2015. 2012, nobody was going to beat them. You know, in that 2009 team that goes 14-0, I mean, there's some flaws to this team. They're imperfect. I think Georgia may even have an edge at the quarterback position, which is huge in a championship game. And, you know, Alabama's defense is what it is. But they've got some issues on the O-line. I think Georgia's running backs might be better overall. So, and Georgia's special teams, I'm not sure that anybody's got a better special teams overall unit than Georgia does between kicker, punter, coverage, and return teams. So, and where's the game being played? You know, I mean, the ticket to this game, guys, is one, it's Super Bowl-like. $2,000 to $3,000 for the worst seats in Mercedes-Benz Stadium because there's so many people in the state of Georgia just dying to get in. So, yeah, this is I think that line's wrong. That was a long answer to say, yeah, I think they got it wrong.
How can Georgia get a big night out of Chubb and Michelle running the ball? Because, I mean, I thought that was the difference against Oklahoma. I mean, they had several runs that were better than 50 yards that went to the house.
You know, they might not be able to. That you know, really, I mean that's, I don't know how they do, to be quite honest with you. This defensive front for Alabama is unbelievable. Jeremy Pruitt is a very strong defensive coordinator. The one thing that Alabama does better than everybody every year, no matter what, is stop the run. They know how to, they're dedicated to it. They sell out on it. I'm not sure those guys ever get going. It will be a great thing. If Georgia has a 100-yard rusher in this game, they're going to win. I'll tell you that right now. I don't think Alabama is going to allow that, or if they do, they won't allow much more. You're going to have to be balanced. You're going to have to throw the ball because Alabama's going to dictate that. And that, again, comes back to Jake Fromm. I think the national narrative that, you know, that he's all about handing the ball to the running backs and doesn't have a championship arm, I think that's a misnomer or whatever you call it. I mean, I think it's inaccurate. I think his arm's way better than people know, and his intelligence is through the roof. I haven't seen a guy like this come in and master as much of an offense to the point now where he has total latitude at the line of scrimmage to get in and out of a play and does it quite well. I think that's a real edge for Georgia, and it'll come in handy, you know, against this, you know, national, probably the best, you know, defense in all of college football.
And quickly, Chip, does Georgia get it done Monday night?
I think so, yeah. I mean, you know, gosh, Bob, I mean, I'm not picking them against them anymore. I have a few times this year. I didn't pick them to win the East, so I own that. I didn't see them, you know, checking all the boxes of all the deficiencies they had coming in. Every one of them was addressed to the letter and came through for Kirby. And, you know, so I'm not going to doubt them at this point. But, listen, there's no way. I was talking to Vince Dooley earlier today. It's not going to be anything like you saw at Oklahoma. They're mirror images. It's going to be a tight, deep south type of football game. I think it's going to be close. And so I think Georgia wins a close, you know, relative low-scoring game because both these teams score more than they used to in the old days. But, I don't think it gets in the 30s. And, this is a team of destiny based on what I've seen. So, you know, something like a field goal at the end of regulation is going to decide it for Georgia based on what I've seen all year.
Chip, thanks for your time. Enjoy it, and be glad you don't have to pay $2,000 to get in there.
Yeah, I am. That is quite a blessing. Thank you, Bob.
All right, Chip Towers covering Georgia and Alabama at DogNation.com. And I'm kind of thinking, too, along with him, Chris, I think it's going to be a game in the 20s.
The shades of the 2012 championship, I guess the 2011 season, the Alabama-LSU game just comes to mind. You know, conference opponents familiar with each other.
But they're not. They don't play.
Yeah, but you common opponents. You yeah. scout them. You
common opponents them. And yeah, common coaching staff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. To say they're unfamiliar. Just
No. They just haven't played. It's not like it's a repeat
They're
game.
Familiar with each
yes.
other.
Yes.
To try to discredit that saying, I don't think is accurate. But yeah, it was a 21-0 game, low scoring and not very exciting. I really hope we don't get that. I'm just nervous.
I don't think we will. I think it's going to be lower scoring, but I don't think it's going to be unexciting. Boise State basketball tomorrow. They come into the game 13-2 against Wyoming, 3-0 in the Mountain West, looking to tie its best Mountain West start ever at 4-0. You can hear it beginning at 5:30 over on 670 KBOI with myself and Abe Jackson. Coming up next is a sports update. How did a 28-point loss to the Broncos just get worse for New Mexico? That's next on Idaho Sports Talk on Sports Radio The Ticket.
Ticket Sports Update, sponsored by Big Judd's. Mondays will never be the same. Hit Big Judd's every Monday for a $13 Big Judd's burger. 1 pound cheeseburger for only $13 on Overland near Eagle Road in protest Hill near Boise State. Well, following a 90-62 loss to Boise State, New Mexico will be without their guard, Troy Simons. Simons was suspended one game by the Mountain West for receiving two technical fouls on the Lobos' loss to Boise State. It's the second time this year Simons has been suspended for receiving two technical fouls in a game.
You know, in watching the game, it's the first time I've ever called a game where a player has been ejected for getting two technicals. I've seen somebody do something egregious enough to get technicaled or thrown out, but not because of two, which would be sort of I don't want to say innocuous technicals, but not like real big inflammatory kind of technicals. But I guess when you had two technicals to get thrown out in another game, the combination adds up and you miss another game.
Yeah, I mean, he got the two technical ejection. Is that a Mountain West rule that if you get a two technical ejection that you're suspended another game?
I don't think so. I think it's because he had one before. It was the second time he'd had a two technical ejection.
I mean, I don't know. Anybody else is like real curious about this. Is there a precedent for it? Like, I feel like that if you're ejected from the game, that's your punishment. That's why the two technicals and you got thrown out. Like, is there a rule like if you get four technicals in a season that you get suspended? Like, what is the basis for him getting suspended?
And like I said, the one of them, it was he and Chandler that were kind of woofing each other a little bit. Both of them got technicals. And then on another one, he kind of muttered something to the referee. I mean, I agree. I didn't think either one. I mean, if they were separate incidents, it was two different guys doing something, you would have thought nothing of either.
Yeah, I don't know. New Mexico, he might not have played the next game anyway if he didn't have enough deflections. So the way they do their business, that was an embarrassment for New Mexico over there and a good win for Boise State.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of Boise State, a lot of people were curious what they were going to do with the 10th assistant coach that was just added to college football. And today, Brian Harsin announced they will be promoting Spencer Danielson to a full-time coaching role. He'd been a graduate assistant for the Broncos this past season and will now work with the Broncos stud position. Shout out Brian Harsin for hiring someone with a nice name to say. That's what I have to say about this man. He is not Coach K as we hired yesterday. Shout out to you and Spencer Danielson for having a great name.
But you retain somebody that helped out with the defensive line. You've got a new defensive line coach coming in. So, again, as we suspected yesterday with the breakdown, 5-4 on the 9 assistants in favor of offensive coaches. And then if you count Harsin as more of an offensive coach, 6-4. We speculated, not knowing who they were even thinking about, Chris, but we thought that Boise State would make the 10th coach a defensive coach.
Yeah, it seems like it makes sense from what everybody was saying even before they made this official. Like, this was a name that was floated out there because of the impact as a grad assistant coach to now get the spot as a full-time, all set, ready to go for the, I guess is the name, the stud coach. I don't really know what the official name is.
Yeah, that's my title,
was.
Stud coach.
Yeah, that's what I was hoping. That's where I was going. Are you the stud coach? Because that's the best assistant coach title.
I always thought that's the best position name.
I'm the stud coach, man. I forget the quarterback coach. Yeah, you might make a little bit more money or whatever, but I'm the stud coach. I put that on a business card and hand that in. That sounds great.
Also looking it up, it looks like Simons violated the Mountain West school rule on sportsmanship. So he was suspended for being a poor sport, basically, by receiving technical fouls.
Didn't they just add that this year, too? I think that's new. Is it this year or last year where they added that? I thought last year was when all the incidents happened.
Oh, and maybe then they added it
for this year because of all the fights and technicals and some of the out of control. Amagbo was involved. That was last year, right, with Rencher. And
that was outside the arena at Colorado State.
Yeah, you had the fight with UNLV women's basketball in Utah State. So I think with all those examples last year of things getting a little out of hand, the Mountain West did add in this thing in the offseason, and this is maybe the first thing based on it.
But I don't think you're going to get suspended for another game if you just get two technicals in or out of one game. I think it was the fact that he had it before.
Yeah, I just would like them to put that on the books then. Like, four technicals in a season, then you get suspended for the next game. Or else it just seems really arbitrary.
But, I mean, are we taking four in separate games?
Yeah, well, like, if he's suspended for four technicals, does it matter if there were two in one game and two in the next? Like, I don't. If you're acting a fool and getting texts,
right?
Does it matter the order of operations that it was?
I mean, otherwise,
two and two?
You could get one in every single game for 10 games in a row.
Yeah,
that's
why I don't really. I need more clarity on this.
Well, going to the NFL playoffs, they start this weekend, and the Buffalo Bills still celebrating the fact that they're making their first playoff appearance in 18 years, and are continuing to thank the Cincinnati Bengals. The Bills announced today that they would be sending 1,440 wings, 90 pounds of celery, 30 pounds of carrots, 6 gallons of blue cheese, and 9 gallons of wing sauce to the Cincinnati Bengals in yet another effort of thanking them for eliminating the Baltimore Ravens from the playoffs.
The best story of the NFL season is the fact that the Bills made the playoffs. I still don't even know how. I never at one point looked at the Bills and was thinking, oh, yo, this is a great team.
And didn't they get rid of Tyrod Taylor for a game when the quarterback, who was the guy that
Peterman.
They brought in?
Peterman.
Who threw, what, 5 interceptions on like his first 7 passes or something? So they basically donated a game away and still somehow came in there for the playoffs. I just wish it was as bad a weather the East is having. I just wish the Bills were the home team.
Oh, yeah, that would have been great, too, to see the cold, snowy, although it's also important games I don't like. Wasn't that the example we used for the Bills-Colts game, why it was cool that it was snowy for that game? It was because, hey, Bills games are meaningless anyway.
Yeah,
it's not like they're playing.
We used that example, yes.
Yeah, we never even thought about the fact that they were really in the hunt for the playoffs and that they would actually make it.
I loved watching Viking games in the 70s. Because they made the playoffs every year. They won the NFC Central virtually every year. The year the Bears won to go to the Super Bowl was like the first time the Vikings didn't win in forever. The Packers were down in the 70s. But it was because they played outside at Old Metropolitan Stadium. I quit rooting for the Vikings, liking them when they moved inside of the Metrodome. I thought it was the worst thing ever to happen to the Viking franchise.
Well, speaking of food in the playoffs, the Bills aren't the only one doing anything. Their opponent this weekend, the Jacksonville Jaguars, they don't need to thank anyone and donate any food, so they've decided to change their own food. The team will be selling teal, which is their main color, ice cream, beer, and hamburger buns during the game. I looked at the hamburger buns online. They look disgusting. They look like they're
moldy.
They
look like they have mold on them? Because teal is sort of moldy.
They look
color.
Like mold color. They're mold teal.
That's the problem with this, is that teal is the color of mold. You can't have teal food because we'll think it's moldy. That's not. Why did the Jaguars need to do something like this?
They haven't been in the playoffs in a long time either.
Yeah. One of them's going to advance.
That is really a playoff game.
Yeah.
The Bills-Jaguars. What were the odds at the beginning of the year that the Jaguars and the Bills would be, the Bills were trying to lose at the beginning of the year. They were training away their good players.
You could have made a case that the Jaguars and the Bills would be battling for the number one pick with the Browns.
Yes. Like, I think that is what the battle was at the beginning of the year. The Bills were trying to get the number one pick. So they were trading away like
Watkins,
Sammy Watkins
to the Rams.
Darius got traded to the Jaguars, I believe. So, yeah, they were trying to lose and get the number one pick. Now they're facing each other in a first-round
wild card game. And maybe we'll make a movie on the theme of Major League when the Indians try to become as bad as possible. Maybe that's what the Bills try to do, and much like that movie, it backfired.
Speaking of the Jaguars, though, fans are the only thing getting some cool swag, and I think the offensive linemen get a little bit cooler than teal hamburger buns. Leonard Fournette broke 1,000 yards this season. Yesterday he announced he bought seven Rolexes for the seven Jaguars offensive linemen that started a game this year to thank them. But when asked if he'd do it again in the future, he said he'd think about it. So they better cash in on those Rolexes because I don't think he's doing it again, apparently.
Well, that's a big ticket.
Yeah, but I mean, if you already have one Rolex, do you need another one? Like, would you do it again?
Don't something like buy, like, you know, ATVs.
Flat screens.
Yeah.
And that's some nice, you know, curved screen TVs now are apparently a thing. Yeah, I don't. Good for Leonard Fournette. I think, what, John Wall did something like that, got his squad Rolexes for Christmas. I just, it can get out of control if you start pressuring, you know, if he gets me a gift, now I need, looking at this guy over here, well, Blake Bortles had a career year, why didn't he get me a gift? Now all of a sudden, you know, the whole team's spending a bunch of money that they don't even have.
Well, but if they win the playoff games, they get money, right?
Well, yeah, but everybody gets the same on that.
Yeah, everyone gets the same wild card.
So
week.
The
gets
backup quarterback for whoever doesn't even take a snap is going to get the same as the starting quarterback. So Hoyer and Brady are going to make the same from here on out.
That's the only time you'll ever say that, Brian Hoyer's, but it is true. And we'll end the sports update with an interesting note. Yesterday, the world of golf excited Tiger Woods was announcing his return, but I have my eyes set on Steve Jeffs. He just set a new Guinness World Record for the fastest golf hole ever played. He played a 500-yard par 5 in 1 minute 50 seconds, setting a new record.
What did he get, a 2?
He got a 4. He was sprinting. there's rules to this.
Trying pace of play? The marshals were on him?
No, I think they cleared out the field. And there's a lot of rules. The hole has to be longer than 500 yards. You have to carry the same number of clubs throughout the hole. 1 minute, 50 seconds. He broke the previous record by 2 seconds.
I don't even know if that's possible. A minute? Under 2 minutes? A 500?
Yeah. They said he was running at a 6 minute mile pace.
And he still made it.
Yeah. He made it in 4 shots. It was pretty impressive.
Where's the YouTube on this?
I will get you the link. I'll put the link out on Twitter.
The NFL playoffs and Super Bowl are always on Sports Radio The Ticket. Tune in Saturday at 2:30 as the Titans visit Kansas City followed by the Rams hosting the Falcons at 6:15. Then Sunday wildcard weekend will continue. Bills at Jacksonville at 11 a.m. and then Carolina and the Saints at 2:45. If you're listening to the NFL playoffs and the Super Bowl, you're listening to Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 a.m. The Ticket. On Quick Hits, what I saw in a college basketball game last night that just wasn't right, and what's the biggest question about Chandler Hutchison. That's next on Sports Radio The Ticket.
Quick Hits with Bob and Chris. Topic number one.
Boy, Chandler Hutchison is playing so well, playing so spectacularly with some of the dunks he had against New Mexico. All right, new question, Chris. He's graduated beyond the is he an NBA prospect now to which team would he fit best with? So what teams would you like to see Chandler look at or look at Chandler?
There's a couple of them. Now, if you think that he's now a back half of the first round type prospect, and that's what you're starting to see, Sam Vecenie of The Athletic and his own podcast, the Game Theory podcast, one of the best NBA draft guys out there, has him inside top 30, which is a first round pick. So, all right, let's think of some of the teams, in the back half of the first round, or teams that could even buy their way into the back half of the first round. First of all, the Spurs would be great because Chip England's there with the Spurs. Who's Chip England? Well, he's their shooting coach, and he's by far the best shooting coach in the NBA, turns guys constantly from non-shooters into excellent shooters, a la Kawhi Leonard being one of them. And now look at him, one of the best players in the sport. Bruce Bowen, another one along those lines. Danny Green. And guys who came into the league not much of a three-point threat and turned themselves into some of the best shooters. So I think the Spurs, just for that, would be a great fit. But then you also look at Hutchison, position, a wing. Really a prototype wing who can defend multiple positions, and if the shot continues to show that it's there, he can play make. We already know that, but if the shot's there, then he can really help any team. But teams that are shallow when it comes to wings, well, the Boston Celtics have a lot of them, but Brad Stevens does a great job of using them all, so that wouldn't be a bad look for him either. But I think the Washington Wizards is the example of a team where John Wall is your guy who handles the ball. Bradley Beal is also another guy. But you need people around those guys who can defend multiple positions, can shoot threes, and then plus on their bench units, be able to play make a little bit. Like, I think a team like Washington should look at Chandler this offseason and think about drafting him in the back half of the first round if Washington keeps their pick.
And I think sometimes coming in with a good team where you can kind of be a role player to start, to me, is an ideal situation to be in. Get on a team that's a good team that'll help you grow because they're good.
Number two.
Why has baseball's hot stove season been about as cool as the East Coast right now?
Well, I think part of the reason is because of the new luxury tax. It seems like teams are more afraid to go over the threshold because the bite is a little bigger than it used to be. But also, I think teams are saving money, gearing up for next year's free agents of Harper, Machado, Donaldson. Kershaw is going to opt out. So you're going to have a much bigger A-list group of free agents next year. I think the agents are also wanting a lot of long-term deals. You see a lot of players asking for 7- and 8-year contracts. I think teams a little bit shy of taking on those kind of contracts. But right now, there's a lot of players that remained unsigned. I've not heard anybody throw the C word out, collusion, yet, but it just seems like teams are moving very slowly this offseason.
7-, 8-year long-term contracts? What are you, crazy? You can't get those unless you're a Monday Night Football broadcaster going back to coaching.
Number three.
What was Draymond Green right about last night?
Well, last year, Draymond Green was in a game against the Clippers. Paul Pierce was a member of the Clippers at that time. And those two got into a little bit of a trash-talking battle. I have the audio here. Now, it's tough to hear because it's Marv Albert in the foreground of it, who was on the call. But if you listen closely in the background, you can hear Draymond Green talking about Paul Pierce, how you're not exactly Kobe Bryant with this farewell tour.
Chasing that farewell tour. They don't love you like that.
By 17.
No
by 46. Is that 144.98? Victory here in Oakland.
Go at the end. You thought you was Kobe? It's kind of funny. Draymond Green, it turns out he's pretty right about that because, Isaiah Thomas, a member of the Celtics from the last couple of years, now a member of the Cleveland Cavaliers, he had his comeback game, although did not play, and therefore they did not play his tribute video at the Celtics game the other day. Well, the next time the Celtics come to town is in February when You know, it's Cavs-Celtics, big game. That is also the game that the Celtics are honoring Paul Pierce. Well, Paul Pierce, who's a member of ESPN now, said this on The Jump about the possibility of Isaiah Thomas having his tribute video with Paul Pierce.
Listen, on February 11th, the night I get my jersey retirement, I'm not sure I want to look up at the Jumbotron and see Isaiah highlights.
Bro,
after all the years I put in.
You don't need to share that with nobody.
You know, I had a chance to watch Kobe's and throughout the game, the timeouts. It was a lot of tribute videos for him, and I enjoyed to watch that throughout the game. Now, hopefully, you know, the Boston Celtics will do that for me. I'm not sure if I want to see an Isaiah video that night.
So Draymond Green was completely right. Say, Paul Pierce really thinks he's Kobe. Pierce, you're not Kobe. Like, you're a good player. You're a Hall of Fame player. You're never a top five player in basketball. Maybe you're a top 10 at times, bottom half, but you're not Kobe. Kobe's a top 10, 15 player all time. Paul Pierce, you might be top 100.
Is Paul Pierce a top 10 Celtic?
I don't think so.
Barely, if that.
Maybe. Maybe.
So it's like, he really thinks he's Kobe. He's not Kobe.
So when it comes to the farewell thing, I get, or it comes to the video tribute, I get it. Like, you want your own day and you don't want to share it with Isaiah Thomas. But Isaiah Thomas had as many NBA, all NBA teams as you, Paul Pierce. Isaiah Thomas, you know, was a top five MVP guy. Paul Pierce only one season. I don't even think any season he was a top five MVP guy. So say what you want. Pierce is a great Celtic. He is a Hall of Fame player, but he's not Kobe Bryant.
Well, here's the thing. How many times are they going to do a tribute to a guy that's playing for another team? One. Probably right before the starting lineups.
Yep.
The pre-game will be all Paul Pierce. And during the game, it's going to be all Paul Pierce. They're not going to tribute Thomas during the rest of the game.
No.
And here's the thing. If you're Paul Pierce and it bothers you that much, call the Celtics up and change the date of yours.
Mm-hmm.
There's how many other home games do the Celtics have?
They have 40 other ones.
Probably left, yeah. 25 more?
Exactly.
Pick another game if you don't want to be there. But, I mean, you kind of have to honor Anthony Thomas on a game that he's actually playing there. I don't think you're going to bring him back for another game. Paul Pierce is lucky to be a top 10 Celtic.
Topic number four.
He thinks he's Kobe. What did you see on the college basketball court that you haven't before?
A referee turning his back on a player. This is how it happened. It was between North Carolina and Florida State, a game won by the Seminoles by 1 point last night in Tallahassee. Joel Berry, star for the Tar Heels, looked like he was grabbed, and that caused him to miss a pass that sailed over his head. No call was whistled by Ted Valentine, who was ahead of the play. Ted referees an awful lot of games during the course of the year. Berry went over with the basketball to hand it to Ted Valentine to say something to him. Valentine didn't want to hear anything and turned his back, really showed him up, in my opinion. I think as an official, as long as the player is calm or a coach is calm, I think you owe it to them to listen to him for a few seconds. I thought what Ted Valentine did was big timing, and I think some of these officials try to be the show.
I heard somebody say that was the official that Bob Knight threw the chair at.
Might have been. He's been around a long time.
He's not exactly unfamiliar with big stages when it comes to controversies with players and coaches. So if this is his style, this is his style. I'm not a big fan of it. Nobody comes to see the referees. Baseball, I don't like when they do it. Basketball, I like it even less.
Quick Hits with Bob and Chris on 93.1 The Ticket.
I think as an official, your job is to try to calm a situation, not exacerbate a situation. And I think some of them, in all sports, have a tendency to now be a little more confrontational than they used to be.
They want to start trending on Twitter, right? Exactly. You can't get your name out there on Twitter if you just calmly hear the explanation and just nod your head. Turning your back, that's just unnecessary.
When we come back, we're going to take a closer look at the NFL Wild Card Weekend. Is there anything worth watching this weekend? We'll be back with more after this on Sports Radio The Ticket. KTIK is your home for all of the NFL playoffs as well as the Super Bowl, and you can hear it starting at 2:30 tomorrow when Tennessee goes to Kansas City. I know, Chris, that a lot of years somebody comes from Wild Card Weekend, either makes the Super Bowl or even wins the Super Bowl. It might even happen this year. But every year it seems when you look at Wild Card Weekend, because the teams with probably the four best records don't play. To me, this is always sort of like an appetizer, not something that's really going to quench your hunger, But there's just some games that are get going. The teams you most want to see aren't being played this weekend. So I think that at best you're looking at usually one good wild card game each year.
Yeah, I think a lot of people would disagree with that. Usually with wild card weekend, people, maybe it's not on the same level as the first 2 days of the NCAA tournament where everybody stops working and it's that exciting. But I think people generally think of the opening week of the NFL playoffs as something that's really fun. Usually see close games. This is the thing about the wild card weekend is you're eliminating the two teams that have a bye from each conference. So in theory, sometimes it's this is the case. You get closer games this week because the teams are closer together in terms of talent or in terms of what they've accomplished this year. You eliminate the squads like the Patriots and the Steelers, for example, in the AFC, where you do think they're a tier above the rest of the squads in that conference. So maybe you should get better games this weekend because you take away the squads that are significantly better. I just think this year's group of teams, and I said it at the very beginning of the year, and some of y'all texted in at 208-424-9300 and completely disagreed, but I told you the AFC would be very weak this year because the lack of quarterbacks. The quarterback depth in the AFC was just not there, and we're seeing it come playoff time. The six teams in the AFC playoffs. Titans, Chiefs. You really? Marcus Mariota versus Alex Smith?
I think based on what they've done this year, you got to go with Alex Smith.
Yeah, and Alex Smith was at a stretch in the middle of the year where he was like worthy of being benched. At least that's what some people were saying. And then you got the Bills and the Jaguars is your other game.
The Bills actually did bench their starting yes. quarterback, Tyrod Taylor. And Blake Bortles is somebody that they've talked about replacing for, what, 3 years now?
Has not been good before this year where he had a good stretch. So I think on the AFC side is where you can be a little bit underwhelmed of the plate that's in front of you. The NFC, I don't know about you, but I'm hyped for both of those games. I think both of those NFC games could be some of the best playoff games that we'll see this year. Falcons and Rams? You want to talk about talent all over that field? You're talking about a squad that was in the Super Bowl last year and basically has the same pieces, except Kyle Shanahan is gone and Steve Sarkisian is just not a good offensive coordinator, and he's the one who's heading up what's going on in Atlanta, so they've underachieved this year. But that's Matt Ryan, that's Julio Jones, Mohamed Sanu, that's Yahope Freeman, who's healthy for that game, and Coleman is also a productive back. That's offense for you, and actually the Falcons' defense this year, if you look at some of the advanced numbers, has been better than their offense. The Rams, best offense in football, and a really good defense, too. So I think that's a great game. It's a Saturday night. That's usually reserved for the highlight game of the week. I think that lives up to the bill. That's a must-watch. And then we got Fisher Saints. What should I expect from them? They got the Panthers, where this is matchup number three between the teams. It's always fun when you get a matchup number three of two division squads matching up against each other in a playoff game. That's always a fun scenario. And the Saints swept the Panthers, right?
Yes, they did. They crushed them.
Both times?
Yes. And you expect Cam Newton crying in a nice suit afterwards and maybe leaving the podium.
That's what we should expect?
Yes, because he will be frustrated once again.
But that's the thing about Cam Newton, though. You stop him once. He had a bad game last week against Atlanta. He wasn't very good. The thing about Cam, though, is the next week he could be completely different and be on fire. So if I'm you, I'm nervous. See, I think the Panthers have the highest ceiling of all these NFC teams because we know when Luke Kuechly's healthy, that defense is just flying all over the place and can hold you down. And Cam Newton's one guy. They're a one-man team on offense. And if that one man is playing at the MVP level that he has at times this year and he was doing a couple of years ago when he won the MVP, there's not really much you're going to do to stop that.
You're completely right, but you guys are talking about quarterbacks. Cam Newton, there's a chance he'll be the best quarterback to play this weekend. Mm-hmm. He could also be the worst quarterback that plays this weekend by a significant margin.
But that doesn't have anything to do with the Saints.
Well,
that's
the
problem.
If Cam
here.
Newton plays terribly, they're not going to win because you just said they're a one-man team.
Plays well, and again, that's not in the control of the Saints. True. If Cam Newton's in rhythm and hitting these passes on time, there's not really much the Saints are going to do. There's not many things anybody can do when he's on.
Don't give him the ball. And when you have two running backs that broke 1,500 yards for the first time in history, it's pretty easy to do that.
Are you watching the Saints these days? I don't even know.
Yes, I'm going to watch it, and then Bob gave me a great idea. I'll start watching it. If they start losing, I will go out into the car. I will turn on Sports Radio Ticket where you can hear all the playoff games, and I will listen in the car so I'm not watching.
He's not watching, but he's able to pay attention.
That's a good strategy.
Yeah.
I'm done with that.
The thing that I look at at the playoffs this year, looking at the I've got the bracket sitting up in front of me. I will be shocked if on January 21st for the AFC Championship, if it's not New England and Pittsburgh. I think the 1 and 2 are so far ahead of 3, 4, 5, and 6. I will be shocked. It'll be a major upset if one of those teams does not, if both of those teams don't advance. But with Philadelphia's quarterback issue, and the Vikings all season, I don't think have ever been really truly respected in the kind of season they've had. I'm not so sure that we're not going to see the NFC champ play this weekend.
I would agree with that. Now, 13-3, has there ever been a quieter 13-3 team than the Vikings? Like 13-3, you're talking about like some of the best teams, like best individual seasons ever when you go 13-3. And then 14-2 is a whole different level, and the Patriots have done that a few times. And then, you know, 15-1, 16-0, those are extremely rare. But 13-3 is solid. The Vikings are 13-3. You would think they're really good. And my favorite scenario from this postseason, at least what I'm hoping for, is that the entire playoff is played in Minnesota, which could happen. They could host every single round, including the Super Bowl. And we've never seen a team play their whole – it could be around their city, but it's never been in their home stadium before where a team plays the entire playoff in their home stadium. That would be a great story, and I do think it would be one of the only fun things about a Super Bowl in Minneapolis.
Well, we've had over 50 Super Bowls, and nobody's ever played one in their stadium.
Yeah. That's
closest
wild.
Have been the Rams played at the Rose Bowl 1 year, and the 49ers played down at Stanford. All right, let me ask this question, just wrapping things up before the playoffs start. Is there anybody in the first round that the first round for them that either the Patriots or Steelers don't want to see, or do they not care and then it doesn't matter? They're going to beat either any of the teams
Chiefs.
They see.
Who doesn't want
to see the Chiefs?
I am Patriots want to see the Chiefs.
They don't.
The Patriots. The one squad that has given them trouble throughout the last 4 years has been Kansas City. Okay. On a couple of occasions, they've laid the beat down on them, including week one of this year. Now, again, they're one of those squads where, again, like the Panthers, they don't always play to their ceiling. But when they do, they have the fastest receiver in the game in Tyreek Hill. They have a running back who – did he win the rushing title? Yeah, he did.
Yes,
because he played in the last week.
He was the only one that got a snap, yes.
Exactly. I forgot whether it was him or Gurley. But, no, yeah, Kareem Hunt did win it. And they have a tight end who's tough to stop, too. So the Patriots, what they do is take away your number one thing. Okay. The Chiefs are really the one squad that has counters to that.
I know the Eagles have issues with Foles. Is there anybody that the Eagles don't want to see in the next round? Or they have their own issues and it doesn't matter who they're playing? And the same thing for the Vikings. Do any of those – I mean, I look at all four of those other NFC teams, and I think you could get beat at home by either Minnesota or Philadelphia.
I'll take it a step farther. The Eagles will be underdogs against whoever they play.
At home.
Yeah. I think they'll be home dogs. Which team would they be favored? I think they'd be underdog against the Falcons. If the Falcons went out and beat the Rams in the first week of the playoffs, I think the Eagles would be underdogs.
And if the Falcons win, they definitely go to Philadelphia.
Yeah.
That would happen.
Mm-hmm.
And then the only one thing we know about it for the next round is that the Eagles cannot play the Rams.
So the Panthers or Saints? I think both of those teams would be favored going to Philly.
The Panthers might be – I would think the Panthers would be a push or maybe a 1 point for the Eagles. I think the Panthers would be the weakest team of the three that you just named. The Saints would probably be a big favorite and the Falcons would, but the Panthers would be close.
What's the weather in Philadelphia this weekend?
Cold. They're part of that snow.
Awful.
There's part of
the Eagles may have wanted to play the first game this weekend.
Yeah. The only problem is if there's a team that's built for cold weather, isn't it the Saints?
Yes, 100%.
Like, that's the whole thing. Like, we talk about them being a dome team, and that's another one of the storylines within it. I think the Saints being the dome team are, out of all the squads in the NFC, are most built for cold weather. They have two running backs. They want to run the ball so much, and they play pretty solid defense. The Eagles need to throw the ball all around. Their running game hasn't been great, at least lately. So it's odd that it turns out to be the case where the dome team is probably the most built for a cold, windy January environment.
I'm going to have to go before a quick pick, so I'm going to give mine now. I'm going to take all four of the home teams. I don't think all four of the home teams are going to win, but I'm going to play the odds. I'm going to take Kansas City, Jacksonville, L.A., and a coin flip, and the Saints at home.
I'm gonna pick all the home teams, but I don't think all the home teams are going to win.
What's the point of this game? I think three out of four home teams are going to win. I just don't sure which one's not. So I'm taking the odds by going with all the home teams.
I mean, he's playing to win this year. Since he lost last year, he's playing
to win. He won the stupid picks thing.
The stupid one, the one that lasts all year.
And with the attitude of, I'm going to pick these teams. They're not going to win, but I'm going to pick them.
No, I
but
think
I'm going to pick who's going to win.
I think the one that I agonized the most over was the Falcons and the Rams, but I think Todd Gurley's the best running back in football, and I think he'll be the difference for the Rams in the game. Hit Dave and Buster's for the football playoffs and register to win a 3-day, 2-night staycation at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas. Watch every game you can at Dave and Buster's this playoff season and register your name to win. You must be present on Sunday, February 4th for the big game to win. You will enjoy a 3-day, 2-night stay at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino, a $300 credit at the exclusive MB Steakhouse, and a pair of VIP concert passes at the Joint. That's all at the Hard Rock. CJP, he'll be there Saturday at 2:30 for the Titans and Chiefs. Up next, Boise State looks to go to 4-0 in the Mountain West. What kind of challenge will Wyoming present? We'll find out from their voice, Dave Walsh, next on Sports Radio The Ticket. Boise State basketball is off to a great start. 13-2 on the season, 3-0. They in Nevada, the only team that are undefeated in Mountain West play, coming off just a thumping of the New Mexico Lobos on Wednesday night, Chris. And now a back-to-back road trip going on at Laramie tomorrow, at Fresno on Tuesday.
Pack your bags, Bob. Get ready for the travel in the Mountain West. Meanwhile, I could stay at home for at least a little bit. Mm-hmm. I feel like I've been on the road for quite a bit to begin it with women's hoops. So see if Boise State, though, on the men's side can keep what they got rolling, because it's really been phenomenal.
Wyoming 10-5, 1-1 on the season. They beat San Diego State at home. They lost to Nevada on the road. Dave Walsh, who is the play-by-play voice of the Cowboys, joins us to give us a little skinny on what's happening with them. Dave, thank you for joining us.
Hey, Bob, my pleasure. How are you?
We are doing great. So Good. Tell us a little bit about the Cowboys. When things go well for them, what kind of team do they have?
Well, when things are going well, they're getting defensive stops. It kind of always starts there, and it has for quite some time here at Wyoming. It kind of starts at that end. But if things are going well for the Cowboys, they're hitting shots. And I know that sounds very basic. That's probably the way it is for everyone. And the Cowboys have just had up-and-down games, and it's been predominantly because of that very thing, just being able to put the ball in the hoop. And I think the Nevada game was such a different game for Wyoming, simply because they didn't have their leading scorer, rebounder, and assist guy on the floor enough. Hayden Dalton just got in foul trouble early and had to sit, only played 7 minutes in the first half in that game the other night. And then picked up his third very early and his fourth to like midway through the second half. So it was kind of handcuffed in that regard. But the Cowboys need to have all those guys functioning and contributing. And I know this sounds, again, very basic. It's probably the same for everyone. But the making shots and then getting defensive stops.
Well, you mentioned Hayden Dalton, and in that game against Nevada, he couldn't get on the court as much. But when he was there against San Diego State, oh boy, 36 points really lit it up. So when he is going, is it just a matter of like him hitting perimeter shots? How does he score?
In every manner you can think of. He can shoot the three. In fact, I think he's still made the most number of threes on the team, right up there near the top. He can take it inside. He's got a vast repertoire. He has a little fadeaway jumper. He'll jab step and fall back for the shot. He can do a lot of things offensively. And again, it's just a matter if those shots are falling and he's going, he's pretty spectacular. 36, and he had 15 rebounds against San Diego State, which in giving away size, obviously, inside. But he is really the complete player, has become, he's just gotten better and better each year, which is, I think, just a sign of good coaching, and he's just a very good player. And not only that, as I mentioned, he has tied for the lead in assists. He can pass the ball, he can shoot it, he can rebound it. So he really is kind of the complete guy. And the other night at Nevada, when he was handcuffed and really didn't get that much playing time, it was up to others to pick up the slack. And Justin James did that. He really showed up. I thought Lou Adams picked up. He had 20. So it was just not enough. The Cowboys got it within four with just a couple and a half to play. And there was a bank shot from 25 feet out, a three-pointer for Nevada at the end as the shot clock was lighting up the backboard. So there was just some very interesting things that happened. But the most troubling thing was the fact that they just didn't get did not get enough playing time or enough production from Hayden Dalton.
We're visiting with Dave Walsh. He is the play-by-play voice of the Wyoming Cowboys. Boise State at Wyoming tomorrow, 6 o'clock tip. Our pregame over on KBOI will begin at 5:30. Dave, when you look at Boise State playing at Wyoming, they've done pretty well, having won 4 of the last 5. It is always a tough place, or it seems to be a tough place, for most teams. As somebody that watches road teams come in, any reason why you think Boise State has played well and fared well at 7,200 feet where some of the others have not?
Yeah, I don't. That altitude thing is a whole different thing. You see it affect some teams. It's usually about the 8-minute mark left in the game. It's late in the second half when all of a sudden it just we always when we see it happen we call it the Wyoming wall. It's like these teams just hit a wall. But don't see that with Boise State. So. Coach Rice is going to, I think, make sure that they're that mental part of it, and it really is a lot that when the lungs first start to burn, some players just think, oh God, what's going on here? But most understand what's going to happen there, and Boise State last year, I think the Broncos came in and dropped 80 on Wyoming here. I think they scored 91 on the Cowboys in Boise, something like that. So. I think number one, the reason that they've played so well here in Laramie against Wyoming is they've had really good teams. You know, those have been really good Boise State teams, and they've come in and played very well. You know, Marks and Drimmick and all those guys had great games against Wyoming. That's why Boise State's won the last 4. Just really good teams, I think, is the main thing. But when I watch Boise State play here lately, they don't let that altitude. It appears to me anyway, Bob. Now, help me here. But I don't see that kind of effect on Boise State teams here.
I was going to say,
seem to be affected by altitude
whatsoever.
And I just
was wondering, did you see everybody else come in? It just seems like they handle it and they play well. I mean, again, you're right. You got to have good players, too.
Yeah, I mean, Wyoming was probably better when Larry Nance was there. Yeah. Boise State's better with Derek Parks.
That's been a few years ago now. So, I think that's the main thing. Just better teams. Boise State has been better than Wyoming the last 4 times they've played. That's all there is to that. I think the last time Wyoming beat Boise State was in the tournament, wasn't it? An overtime game, maybe, even along the way when Wyoming won the tournament. That's back in 15 or something, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, Boise State's had great teams. But I've seen no effect that altitude thing or whether they're hitting a wall or looking gassed at the end of the game here at altitude with Boise State at all.
Dave Walsh joining us, the voice of Wyoming, and we're talking about great players. Well, Chandler Hutchison's the next in line for Boise State when it comes to talented players. For Wyoming defensively, have they played mostly man, mixed in zone, and what could be an attack for Chandler?
Both. You'll see both. Wyoming has mixed in zone here the last couple of seasons, but of course this depends on just the situation in the game. Wyoming played a lot of zone at Nevada because they had to with Dalton off the floor and that's he's actually one of the bigs and he's 186 pounds but when he's off the floor then you'll see more zone from Wyoming in that particular case, but you will see zone mixed in, and I think Allen Edwards is just the type. He's going to try if something's not working, he's going to try something else I think there'll be 3 or 4 different guys who will pick up Hutchison in the man-to-man. I really do. I don't know how else you defend that guy. I think you have to let a few guys, maybe a couple guys, take a shot at him. But Wyoming kind of does that anyway. So but he's such a great player, and I was talking about Dalton being kind of the complete player, and he can do all these things. Hutchison is like that. He's just a. He's a problem, he's a load, and he's a big challenge for anybody that tries to guard him.
Dave, thanks so much for visiting with us. Are you going to order me up 70 degrees when I get off the plane later today?
You got it. That's our story. Now, whether it turns out that way, Bob, 70, you got it.
All right, 70. I'll see you over there at the Arena Auditorium tomorrow. Appreciate it.
All right, Bob. Hey, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
All right, and that's Dave Walsh, the voice of the Cowboys. He was just in Boise. Had a lot of fun with that famous Idaho Potato Bowl, I'm sure.
Indeed. So, Good luck with your 70 degrees. I mean, you can,
I'll probably maybe north of 7, right?
You can pray. I don't know what else you could do, but if you can get it to be 70 degrees, let me know what you did. Because
so you're
going to
be back
the
there
same
later
thing.
In the year?
I'll try to do that same thing.
And again, don't forget, it'll be tomorrow at 6 o'clock tip, 5:30 pregame, Boise State against Wyoming Broncos going for 4-0. They've been 4-0 in the conference the last 2 years, never been 5-0 in the Mountain West. Got two road games. If they can get it done, they'll be 5-0 for the first time in the Mountain West. I'm going to take off, Chris, and fish. You guys will take us the rest of the way. Got to scoot to the plane to get to Laramie, where I'm hoping it's going to be 70. I don't think that's going to be the case. Up next, sports update. Who's the latest coach to join the Boise State football staff? That's next on Sports Radio The Ticket.
Ticket Sports Update, sponsored by Big Judd's. What's better than Twinkies and pickles? Big Judd's Deep Fried Twinkies and Pickles. Try Deep Fried Goodness, Meridian on Overland and Eagle Road, and near Boise State on Protest Hill. And Chris, would you eat a teal-colored Twinkie?
I mean, no. Unless it was, you told me it was food color, because if I saw a teal-colored Twinkie, I think it's moldy. And I don't eat moldy food, I throw it away.
Now, of course, there's a reference to Jacksonville Jaguars, their first playoff game in, probably like 10 years.
Do you know who was the starting quarterback the last time they had a playoff game?
David Garrard?
Yes, it was.
It was either Leftwich or Garrard. I knew I had a 50-50. But they're making... See, teal ice cream, that's not too bad. You can pass that off as like Rocky Road. Teal beer. Teams dive beer all the time. But teal hamburger buns.
That just looks like mold.
They look like mold. I would not eat that.
Teal is the color of mold, which makes you wonder, why is teal the main color of the Jaguars?
Because they play like mold. And no one wants to watch or eat anything that they serve.
That's pretty much it. Like, there's nothing about a Jaguar that's teal. Like, I'm sure somebody has the answer. And, like, when they became a franchise, was it 96?
Like, they were all teal. They've gotten away from the teal. It's more of the gold and black now, which is Jag. But, like, those original uniforms were teal.
There has to be something about the city or something like
or
that. Because
I mean, gold and black's a pretty popular color. The Saints have it.
Yeah, but that is the color of a Jaguar, you know, gold, black, spots. Yeah, that should be.
What, so they should what put team, spots of teal in it.
Is there a team that really emphasizes gold in that way in the NFL? Like, I feel like it'd be a unique color scheme. You know, the Packers have a little bit of
be
green
hard
and yellow.
To
the
see,
Steelers.
Because it's yellow.
The Washington is gold, burgundy and gold.
But they highlight the burgundy. I don't think any team is primarily gold.
Saints? Your Saints?
They're black. Their color rusher have the gold and white. But no team is like, I want like a gold uniform and white. Numbers.
Yeah, gold and black, the closest thing you have in the NFL to that color palette is the Saints.
And they're primarily black. And cheetahs are primarily gold.
Well, they're Jaguars, not
Jaguars,
cheetahs.
Yeah. They look
they're
the
different
same.
Animals.
Yeah, well.
One's a little faster than the other.
So basically like the Jaguars.
Although the Detroit Lions are blue, so what are we
yeah,
talking
exactly.
about?
What are we talking about? So the Lions are blue.
I mean, this really doesn't make any sense when you think about it. How many other? Browns are orange. Tells you everything you need to know.
Yeah.
The Cleveland Browns aren't even brown, except they're alternate.
Well, going to Boise State basketball, we just got to talk to Dave Walsh, the voice of the Wyoming Cowboys. That's where Bob's off to, as the team will play Wyoming tomorrow, and Walsh had made the comment that Boise State never seemed to get affected by the altitude, and today at his press conference, what Leon Rice had to say about how the team handles the altitude in Wyoming.
We do. We have our ways that we approach it and the ways we attack it, and they're, you know, scientifically proven, and so we stick with it and do what we can, and, you know, we've studied it. We give our guys the best chance that they have to go out and accomplish the mission, and like I said, we know that elevation isn't the biggest challenge. The Wyoming Cowboys are the biggest challenge. There's a really good basketball team.
The fact that he said it's scientifically proven means I know it. Tom Brady won't endorse it.
Oh, shout out TB12.
TB12 and the non. So we had this discussion. So his trainer, Alex Guerrero, not related to our Boise State Alex Guerrero. So how do you differentiate the two?
I feel like Alex Guerrero, the Boise State one, can't go by Alex anymore. Alexander H. or something. I don't know what his middle initial is. But you can't be Alex Guerrero who works with athletes anymore.
Yeah, because there's an Alex Guerrero that also works with athletes who has some
sketchiness.
Iffy scientific claims going on.
And now the sketchiness has been around for a while. It's just more publicized now than before. It's where you hear the name Alex Guerrero. Now there's some kind of association with it. there wasn't an association with it before. It's like if your name was O.J. Simpson and you're not that O.J. Simpson. Okay, I'm not comparing
them. I think that it would be more if you have a white Bronco.
Okay.
That would be the more you would... Is that him? Is that in Boise? Is that him? Now, speaking of the NFL, it's all but official. I even saw it on Darren Rovell that everything's set in stone. The contract just needs to be signed. But on Tuesday, the Oakland Raiders will introduce John Gruden as their next head coach. And he will be getting a 10-year, $100 million contract.
All about the money, man. Adam Schefter reported that it was 10-year, $100 million. And we'll talk about this a little bit more on Tuesday when it becomes
official.
Yeah, and Bob and I have some time to go at it head-to-head. But I have a problem with somebody of John Gruden's resume getting a 10-year, $100 million contract to be a head coach. What about him says 10 years, $100 million? He's basically Jim Caldwell. I was going through the resume, and the winning percentage... very similar. Background similar. Both offensive guys, worked with some quarterbacks, and when they've had, you know, pretty good quarterbacks, they've had success.
When they've inherited good teams, they've made Super Bowls.
Correct. And after that, they've had some good years where they've made the playoffs, some pretty bad years. In fact, I don't think Caldwell's had years as bad as some of the ones that John Gruden had outside of the season where Peyton Manning got hurt and Caldwell's team went 2-14 and they got fired. But my point is, we act like Jim Caldwell is trash. Like, he's been fired twice. I don't think his name garners much respect amongst the media. I think he must skip, like, the company Christmas parties. Because this is a dude with the Lions. 9-7, playoff appearance, I think at one point 10-6. And the one bad year was 7-9. And yet he gets shown the door. And with the Colts, he was 14-2. Another year, 10-6. Then one year, he goes 2-14 without Peyton Manning. He gets shown the door. So he's treated like trash. And John Gruden, similar winning percentage, similar seasons, similar situations, and the dude gets 10 years, $100 million. What is the drastic difference between those two? And don't tell me Super Bowl ring, because if Peyton Manning did not throw that interception to Terry Porter in that Super Bowl, something that didn't have anything to do with coaching, Colts would have won that one.
No, they wouldn't have. But we won't get into that. The biggest difference, and this is what maybe Caldwell should do, Monday Night Football. TV makes you look smarter. So it's clearly Jim Caldwell should work for ESPN for 5 years, and then he'll get, by that maybe point, maybe 10 years, $200 million.
It's, you don't, maybe you do become a better coach, I don't know, by being a broadcaster.
You look like a better coach.
But 10-year, $100 million,
will
like
he
this
le-
is going to redefine, if he's successful, redefine how we treat non-athletes from the compensation standpoint, the salary structures in sports. And if it flops, it'll be a laughingstock contract. Like, he right now has the most outrageous deal in sports. 10 years, $100 million for a coach becomes the most outlandish, maybe the right word here is outlier deal in sports, because it is nothing like anything else. 10 year, $100 million is nothing like any other coach.
Well, there's one that comes close to it, and I was going to ask you this question. Who lasts longer with their 10-year contract, John Gruden or Jimbo Fisher? Because Jimbo Fisher got 10 years, $75
billion. Yeah, I guess if you compare it to college, it's a little bit different. But, go Jimbo Fisher. Probably lasts longer. College, you're
leeway.
You can be the emperor, if you will, of your team.
The emperor of Garden City. Is he taking Prater's title?
A little bit. In the NFL, I don't know. He might have all that power. I don't know. This is unprecedented when you have a 10-year, $100 million contract. I think my follow-up, and we could do a whole radio show on this, nevertheless, like the couple minutes we have in the sports update. But how big is the list of non-athletes in sports that you would give a 10-year, $100 million contract to? List of non-athletes that would command that. And I'm mostly thinking professional sports here. Like, you could argue Nick Saban.
Yeah, because I think Nick Saban would be the first one that comes up.
But in professional sports, because I think college works with a whole different structure of how it's handled. Like Coach K, I don't know, might be worth it, who knows. But in professional sports, what non-athlete figure is worth 10 years, $100 million?
The only thing that can come to mind, and you might say it's more of a proxer, Steve Kerr.
Steve Kerr, no.
For what
when Steve Kerr misses the
okay,
time...
if Steve Kerr was healthy, though. What he did to the Warriors
is great, but impressive. The problem is Steve Kerr, when he missed time, the team doesn't lose. Like, do you really say he's that
true.
Much value
see, maybe
above
he's
replacement?
He's installed such a great system.
Okay.
He'd be the only one I can. Because baseball, there's no manager where I'd say I need him. Now, you know, George Torrey lost World Series. If he went undefeated in World Series, maybe I'd pick him. Basketball, Tyronn Lue was really coached by LeBron James.
Yeah. Like, LeBron's maybe worth 10 Popovich? Years, $100 million, no doubt.
Popovich?
I mean, he's thinking, older, but, like, can you give him 10 years?
No, I don't think it'll last 10 years. See, the only two coaches I give it to, neither of them are going to make the 10 years, one for health, one for age.
Here's the guy I came up with after thinking about this question, and if you have one, 208-424-9300.
Roger Goodell. Lose money?
Heck no. Theo Epstein. Again, non-athletes. I didn't say coach. Non-athletes. Theo Epstein has won a World Series with the Red Sox and Cubs. If he's your executive, you're probably going to be in a position, no matter what your starting point was, that you're going to be contending for a World Series at some point. He's shown it. He has the receipts. If you want to give anybody who's not an athlete 10 years, 100 mil, like, I think front office positions, in a way, have more of an impact on long-term success than coaching does. I really do think, like, GMs, the people who make personnel decisions, those are the ones that really control sustainability. So if I'm going to give that kind of money to somebody who's not actually on the field playing, I'm more likely to give it to a front office guy than a coach.
Sad thing is, that might be a pay drop for Theo Epstein, I think.
Might be a what?
He might lose money on that contract per year.
What's he making?
I think he might be making very close to $10 million a year. Okay. I'll double check that. And also, Chris, I just popped in my head. Have you seen the NFL playoff commercial? Which,
no,
of course, you can listen to the NFL playoffs all week starting tomorrow on Sports Radio The Ticket. It shows a bunch of players who didn't make the playoffs running into Minneapolis. It's really weird. Like, is they're all in the frozen tundra. They're all, you know, bundled up, and you have, like, Earl Thomas, DeAndre Hopkins, Von Miller. None of these guys made the playoffs.
They clearly filmed this commercial before the season.
And then they
started.
Show Michael Thomas. He's the only playoff player that even is in the commercial, and then they show highlights of the teams. But are they, like, running to watch it? Were they, like, did they die in the snowstorm to Minnesota?
It sounds like the NBC Open, you know, the... Well, I'm waiting all day for Sunday night, but they actually got rid of that one.
Yeah.
I forget what it is. Like, Sunday night. Something.
Oh, yeah. It's Sunday night, yeah.
Yeah. And they have all the players in there. And then, like, as the year moves on and all of them get hurt, they, like, slowly remove them. It's kind of like that. They should have slowly removed the players who weren't in the postseason contention. They're not going to get to the Super Bowl. So,
I don't know. It's like maybe think like Von Miller's going to die in the snow of Minnesota because he's walking to the stadium.
They'll all be there, though. That's the thing about Super Bowl week. They'll all be there promoting some product.
Do you really want to go to Minnesota, though? Like, this might be the one where I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to go to this one. I'll go to next year's in wherever it is. I think it's somewhere warm, hopefully. I'm not going to Minnesota. It's cold out there.
This is the problem with the NFL and how you know that they don't have enough women in decision-making positions. Is the fact that Minnesota gets a Super Bowl. You know, the Super Bowl is not just for a game. You know, there's parties, there's events, there's, like, things that, you know, executives have to go to, and, you know, ways to have fun. Super Bowl week, all the parties. For men, it's one thing, because you typically, to these events, you wear a suit, tie, heavy coat. It's all fine and all that. Women have a completely different struggle when it comes to having to dress up, but then also have to deal with the freezing temperatures of Minnesota. So they clearly didn't have enough women in decision-making positions to be like, hey, what about us? We have to dress up, we have to wear the heels, we have to do all this. But meanwhile, it's 20 degrees outside, and we have to walk from one building to the next. Nobody thought of them.
I don't think they had reasonable people in the decision-making process to put a Super Bowl in Minnesota. New stadium or not, I don't want to go to Minnesota. If the Saints make it, I ain't going to Minnesota. Put it in L.A. Put it in somewhere else. But I think that there's no reasonable people. Well, the NFL playoffs and Super Bowl are always on Sports Radio Ticket. Tune in Saturday at 2:30 as the Titans visit Kansas City to clash with the Chiefs, followed by the Rams hosting the Falcons at 6:15. Sunday wildcard weekend continues at 11 a.m. Bills at the Jacksonville, and then 2:45, obviously the game of the weekend. Carolina goes to get slaughtered by my New Orleans Saints. If you're listening to the NFL playoffs and the Super Bowl, you are listening to Sports Radio 931 FM and 1350 AM. The Ticket, it's a Friday. It's time for quick picks. Bob already gave his. We'll recap. What did he say? I'm picking the home teams, but they're not all going to win.
Yes.
We'll recap those picks, and we'll get Chris's picks next on Sports Radio The Ticket.
It's time to consult the Magic 8-Ball. Open up a fortune cookie, or maybe even flip a coin.
I get him. into the future.
However they do it, it's time for some quick picks and predictions with Bob and Chris.
And quick picks and predictions brought to you by Pro-Am Sports, your full-service pro shop and bowling specialist with high-quality bowling balls, bags, shoes, and accessories located right inside Westie's Garden Lanes in Garden City. Now, Bob, unfortunately, not here to give his picks. He's on his way to Laramie, Wyoming, where he's hoping the weather is 70 degrees. So I think he's going to start 0 for 1 on these picks, right? Because it's not going to be 70 in Laramie.
Yeah, he can wish all he wants. What if it is 70, though? Like, we need to think about what we will do if it is 70
degrees.
That confirms
global warming is real.
It does. It also, like, should we, like, rub Bob's head for good luck wherever we go? Because if he says it's 70 degrees and then it's suddenly 70 degrees in Laramie, I just feel like we need to treat.
If it's 70 and the Bulldogs win the national championship, yes.
Okay.
If that post happy, you bring Bob everywhere. You got a big interview, Bob's driving you there.
Okay. What about, like, should we feed him? Like, make sure he's always happy so he blesses us?
It might be something that, you know, Teresa's feeding him. That's bringing him the good luck. So we don't want to mess with anything. We just want Bob to be in our presence. We want Bob to grace us.
Makes sense to me.
Well, when it comes to the playoff picks, Bob already made all his, and he went with the interesting route. He picked all four home teams, then to only say later that he doesn't think all four will win. He's just going with the math.
Come on. Have some conviction. Have some honor. Pick who you think's going to win the games.
I believe he said three of the four home teams would win. He didn't know who would lose.
I want winners, in the words of Mike Singletary. I want winners. I want you to tell me who's going to win. I want you to tell me why. I want to pick all the teams, but they're not going to win. What is that?
But in case you need a reminder, the home teams are Kansas City, Jacksonville, the Rams, and the Saints.
Okay.
So that's who he's got. Who do you have this wild card weekend, Chris Lewis?
All right, let's take them one at a time.
Yeah,
are you going to give your analysis on these or no?
Yeah, all right. We'll start with the first game that's being played. Kansas City, Tennessee kicks it off. Sports Radio Ticket, 2 o'clock tomorrow.
This is going to be the biggest blowout of Wild Card Weekend. It's going to be the first game. This is going to be John Gruden's game, right? This is on TV. It's a John Gruden game. So this is his farewell. He makes more money than all the players on both rosters combined with his $100 million coming up in the next 10 years. But the Chiefs win the game. The Chiefs started to play a little bit better like they did at the beginning of the year. Towards the end of the season, their offense got rolling. If they give the ball to Kareem Hunt, he's their centerpiece. And the more they remember that, the better off they'll be. They need to give him the ball, and everything else goes off of the fact that Kareem can give you 5 to 6 yards a carry. Once they start getting cute and try to throw the ball and be, you know, the greatest show on not turf, is when they get into trouble and rely on Alex Smith to drive the bus. It's Kareem Hunt's team. And I think no matter what, they're better than the Titans.
Up next, the Saturday game, which most likely might be the best one of the weekend. Chris, the Falcons traveling to L.A. to play the Rams.
By the way, more than 8.5, too, in case you were on that, too. I got KC. And the Rams-Falcons, this is one of the ones where I'd pick the Rams to win, but I think the Falcons would cover, if that's the way you look at it. I think this is a 3-point game. Either way, this is one of the last drives. Does Matt Ryan have the ball, or does Jared Goff have the ball? And mainly does Todd Gurley have it if it's the Rams. But I think in terms of confidence picks, this is probably the last on my list. I'm going to pick the Rams. I'd pick the Falcons to cover. And home field advantage is really the one thing that's swaying me.
Next up in a matchup of teams who you never thought would be in the playoffs this year, the Bills at the Jaguars. Before we get your pick, the Jaguars, of course, making their hamburger buns, their beer, and their ice cream teal. We were confused why. We got a text from Tom. It says the eyes of Jaguars are teal.
Oh, okay. This logo, the tongue is teal in the Jaguars logo.
I just feel like that's a little inaccurate. We also did get another text before you make you pick. Jags are a lock in the AFC.
A lock?
A lock.
Oh, God, they're not going to like my pick here. But so I picked both of the home teams so far and picked the Rams slightly. I just looked up. The Rams are 4-4 at home. The Falcons are 5-3 on the road, and I picked this based on home field advantage.
I think
so the Falcons have a better road record than the Rams have home record, and I picked the team based on home field
advantage. As the
guy
says, you probably just shook the Magic 8 ball, and then you claimed home field advantage.
I might regret that one. Here I'm going to go with the Bills. First time in the playoffs, the Jaguars didn't look really any good the last couple of weeks of the year, and I know the stat. It's probably you weigh the first 10 games more than you weigh the last two. But I don't know. Bills might be just something about, you know, Tyrod Taylor, LeSean McCoy, if he's healthy. That's probably the biggest swing factor of this game. Last I checked, he was missing practice. So that might be the swing here. But, hey, I think it's more fun to be on the Bills' side and be wrong, especially if you're getting 8.5 points. Going with the Bills to win outright anyway. Jaguars aren't good enough for me to go with them in the playoffs.
Somebody blocked it in. And then, Chris, the music's running out, but we have one game to get to. And remember, I control the microphones. If there's silence, you'll know why. Who do you got in the final game, Chris? Carolina at the Saints. Carolina lost both the games when they played. Just a reminder. You're basing it on anything.
Fitz clearly cut my mic off. Yeah,
clearly,
my pick.
Yeah,
I just gave my
why.
Pick.
Yeah, yes.
And Fitz didn't let me go.
No, I did not
want
to hear it. I did not want to hear it.
I'm going to try
no.
it again.
All right.
Fitz, why'd you cut my mic off again?
I can read. I read in your lips. It doesn't look like it says Saints.
Come on, Fitz. Let me get my pick out.
All right.
Panthers.
I'll let you go this time.
I snuck it.
No, go for it. I won't cut it this time. Go for it. Who you got?
Carolina Panthers. In this game. It's a good Cam Newton game. And Jonathan Stewart's supposed to be back, too. That was a big miss in that Falcons game. Not many people are talking about the fact that Jonathan Stewart did not play. That allows Christian McCaffrey to be his normal, like, slot receiver type guy.
His lesser Alvin Kamara that cost him a first-round pick?
Yeah, that's not inaccurate. Put it that way. But I'm going to go with Carolina. Saints aren't going to beat them three times.
Boo. Real quick, before we go to Prater and Rick Worthington, we got a text from Darren and Kuna. John Gruden will take home over $500,000 a month after taxes. Just so you can let that sink in.
Ooh. John Gruden, man, living the life that you should. Get that money. All right, we got playoff football this weekend. That's fun. National Championship is on Monday. We'll have that preview when we return on Monday. I'm next, Morado. Sports Talk on the ticket.
Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM. The Ticket.